Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. I am so glad today to be joined by Rainey Irving Sanders. Now, Rainey has taught nutritional education at her local YMCA, and she had been active in local sustainable food movement for almost 5 years. She spent a lot of time on education and awareness through writing and events, and she became involved. And one example is the school lunch initiative that she started in her city in Boise, Idaho, to improve the quality of lunches in the school district. And there's a lot of frustration that she had, and I'm sure people listening can relate. And so she continued working in outreach on the internet on her site, Agriculture Society. The site is a result of lifelong health issues that she was unable to solve through conventional means in Western medicine. And when Rainey hit rock bottom, she began researching ways to alleviate her symptoms and found solutions to her health problems through real traditional food. And today she's going to share that with us. Rainey, I'm so glad to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me, Lisa.
Yes. Now, Rainey, can you tell us about some of these health issues and the problems you were experiencing?
Well, throughout most of my life, probably until about 5 years ago, and I'm 41 right now, for many years, probably about 20, I had an awful lot of just different symptoms that I couldn't alleviate, couldn't figure out what the problem was, and I went to doctors, and, you know, I was often told that I was a hypochondriac, or it was in my head, or something of that nature. Some of the symptoms that I had were things that I hear from actually a lot of people that I talk to on an almost daily basis, and those are things like nausea, general overwhelming, constant fatigue. I had a really difficult time for many years with what I thought was anxiety and panic attacks. So I had one of the most overriding symptoms I had that really, really ruled my life was that I had episodes where my heart would start racing. And sometimes it would be in the middle of the day. Often it would happen in the middle of the night and it would wake me up and I would be awake for hours. And then by morning, I'd feel like I had been hit by a truck.
And
you know, I know a lot of people experience those things, and those things, you know, they really make it hard to carry on with normal life. And as we all know, life is very stressful anyway, so that makes it even more so.
Of course. Yeah, definitely.
So after I got tired of, you know, getting prescription drug medication recommendations from the doctor for anxiety and things like that for probably almost 15 to 20 years that was going on and not getting the results that I wanted, I started, you know, thinking that I really needed to go out on this on my own and sort of figure out what was going on. And over time, I you know, talked with people and I met with different alternative care practitioners, started experimenting with my diet. And it turns out that most of my problems were centered around a lot of processed foods, a lot of high sugar and refined carbohydrate content foods. And then I was actually drinking quite a bit of alcohol, because I was involved in a community in my local area where I was a music and event promoter. And as we all know, things like that center around a lot of alcoholic consumption. So basically, you know, I started realizing, you know, if I don't end this way of eating and living, I'm probably going to end up, you know, with something pretty serious in the short term. And so I changed my diet. And essentially now what I eat are what I like to call, and a lot of the people that are in the blog group that I belong to, is traditional foods. And those are foods that people have eaten essentially for thousands of years all over the planet and have been good health through nutrient-dense eating. That's essentially, in the short version, you know, what I've gone through and what I've discovered.
Yeah, you know, I eat the same way, and that's why I was really excited to talk with you. I just interviewed Rob Wolf, who wrote the Paleolithic Solution, and he is he's fabulous, by the way, and people can listen to that on my audio archives on itsyourhealthnetwork.com. And what's great is, I mean, he was saying the same kinds of things, and it really is looking at, you know, grass-fed beef and fruits and vegetables. And, you know, like I have a yam for breakfast every morning and people think that's wacky, but you know what? It fills me up. And then later I'll have an avocado with some tomatoes and then I'll have some grass-fed beef and I eat very little grains. Now with the Paleolithic diet, they don't like to do any grains, even whole grains. Now, how do you feel about that? How does it work with the traditional food movement?
Well, you know, I really do think that the paleo diet is a fantastic way to go. And I think that for me, I don't eat a lot of grains myself either. I do eat them occasionally. I think probably the good balance for eating grains, if you're going to do that at all, is, and a lot of people aren't familiar with these types of procedures for preparing grains, but the best way to eat them, if you are going to have them, is traditional preparation through soaking, sprouting, leavening and also fermentation.
Okay, now that has, that's like what the raw food folks like to do, I understand.
I think that's true, but many traditional food activists and enthusiasts, you know, eat that way too. So I think there's somewhat of a crossover. Now, when you ask the paleo folks, you know, whether grains are okay, you know, they say no. And by and large, I think I really do agree with what they're saying, because I know that from the research I've done, consumption of grains, which we do a lot of in modern society because, you know, there's a lot of convenience foods that are processed and packaged and that are grain-based. And basically, those foods are very high in omega-6s, mm-hmm. and they cause inflammation in the body. They cause, you know, just about any modern disease or illness you can think of, obesity, heart disease, osteoporosis, a lot of autoimmune disorders, you know, like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, and even MS, and they also cause cancer. So absolutely, the paleo diets are very smart, and they're very, they're real basic, and they try to get people to go back and eat the stuff that our ancestors were eating thousands and thousands of years before farming started, which is where grain production kind of, you know, went into full thrust, actually.
Yeah, well, I know for myself, I feel a million times better. I mean, last night, for example, I made a fed beef, and I, you know, sauteed it with some garlic, and then I put in some tomatoes and, like, made kind of a tomato sauce, and then I put it over haricot verts, which probably sounds kind of funny, but it's really good.
I don't know what that is.
You know, it's real, because, I mean, I know, yes, they're not noodles, but just the fact that they're longer and skinnier than regular green beans, but there's a lot of things that you can do to be creative. And, you know, I know one of the things that you'd like to focus on today, which I think is great, is the idea that sustainable food is not just for the wealthy, and that there are ways to eat healthy without breaking your budget. And I think right there, you just need a little bit of grass-fed meat, some tomatoes, some, you know, I got the frozen organic green beans. You know, I'm big on frozen vegetables. So I'd love to talk about that with you.
You know, I think there's been an awful lot of, I want to bring this up because I think it's very important and it makes it accessible to people. There's been a lot of authors who've talked about just, you know, how easy it is to eat sustainable food, in particular because so many of our communities now are making those foods available. I know there's kind of a big push for, you know, eating local versus foods that you bring in from thousands of miles away. One of the authors that I can think of who talks about this a lot is Anna Lepe, who recently wrote a book called Diet for a Hot Planet. And even though she does talk to some extent about reducing our meat consumption, she really does focus very well, I think, on eating meats that are produced, as you said, grass-fed mm-hmm. meat, local meats that are from animals that are in healthy environments and are on pasture, you know, grazing. And so I like that, you know, even though there are a lot of proponents of, you know, eating healthier that say eat less meat, I think the key is that if you're going to eat meat, you should make those choices. And ultimately, you'll end up eating less meat because your body will be satisfied and
yes.
you will feel full and you won't need to spend as much as you do when you buy conventional meat, which doesn't fill you up.
Yeah, that's true.
If you think about what those animals are eating, they're eating grains, they're eating soy, and they're eating a lot of other things like silage, and actually sometimes they're fed horrible toxic stuff that I don't even want to mention on the air because it would probably make a lot of people, you know, sick to their stomachs. But, you know, when you're eating meat that comes from a healthy source that has all the right ingredients in the diet, like the conjugated linoleic acid, which is a cancer-fighting agent, contains more omega-3s, has also vitamin D and vitamin A, which are absolutely essential to reducing cancer, you're getting more nutrition per serving and your body's more satisfied. And you just ultimately end up being full and spending less money.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I know it's funny because I've been in the health field for over 20 years and so many people will assume that I'm a vegetarian because I'm health conscious. And it's like, no.
Yep.
Not that there's anything against vegetarians, but just for me, that diet doesn't work. Although I do eat a ton of vegetables and fruit, so.
Me too.
But I definitely like meat. One thing that I've had trouble with is finding chickens because I know, like, if I buy the free range, okay, so I'll buy free range organic chickens, you know, at a health food store. But I know that they're not local, and I know that they're probably fed corn. But then I think, well, where am I going to buy my chickens? So I guess is it better to look at like small farms, or is there some kind of website or something that has information about something like that?
Well, you know, one of the ones that I've heard of that people use a lot is called Local Harvest.
Okay.
can just do a search for it on the internet. It probably will come up right away. I don't remember if it's a .org or .com, but personally, yes, I think it's very important. In fact, I wrote an article recently on my website about deciphering poultry and egg labels, because there is a lot of, I think, assumptions that consumers make about what they see on the labels, and those labels often are not completely truthful, and they help sell products. They're not there to make you healthy. They're there to move product and make profits. So, like, one thing that I have noticed is that still in a grocery store, you'll see labels will say cage-free and free-range, and those are two of the most misleading labels that, you know, that you can really find in the store as far as meat and eggs and cheese and milk and things like that go. Because free-range, you know, there's so many different laws associated with the labeling of that particular term, and it actually doesn't mean that animals have access to pasture or even that they go outside for more than an hour at a time during the day.
Wow.
So, yeah, so, you know, what I do is I go to my local farmer's market because it's only a mile and a half from my house, so I get to walk down there once a week, and
that's
really
awesome.
Fun.
That
it is awesome.
Great.
And I can go there and I can have conversations with the farmers. I've actually been to some of the farms that I buy food from and find out how their, you know, their farming practices are. And I buy my eggs and my chickens from a woman who raises animals and birds probably 30 miles away from where I live. And I've seen pictures that she brings to her booth, and I've seen stuff on her website, and I know exactly what's going into the chickens, and I know that they're on pasture.
Oh, that is great. You see, that's something that, you know, I live like 20 minutes outside of New Hampshire, and I'm sure there's some farms up there. So I'm going to have to look into it. So local harvest. Yeah, because right now I go to I love the Whole Foods in my town, and I just, you know, they have those rotisserie chickens and they smell so good, you know. It's hard to resist. I have to admit, you know, it definitely is hard to resist. But if I could find something, you know, where I know that they're more healthy and it's better for the environment, it's better for the animals and stuff, I think that is huge. You know, another thing that I think is really important, you know, we talked about finding local farms. I love this idea you have of carpooling and sharing delivery duty. So if you can find some other folks, you know, I interviewed some women recently who wrote a wonderful book on gluten-free cooking, and Annalise Roberts and Claudia Pillow. And they were talking about, you know, they'll buy a whole cow and then divide it up. Like, they'll go up to a farm or something, you know? Sounds kind of funny, but it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You want me to talk about
that
at all?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, so right now, and this is just something that I've been so excited about, and I've told everybody, you know, in my local area about this amazing farm that we get our grass-fed meat, and we also drink raw milk. This is an organic farm that is about 30 miles away from our house, not the same place that I get my chickens and eggs, so another great farm. And we've been getting our milk and meat from them for probably a little over a year. Now, for our milk, we do a carpool delivery system with three or four other families, and it depends on who's on the list each time that we sign up for a new co-op group for the milk, because we run about 20 weeks roughly on our co-op groups, and then we start over for the next season or for the following year, because like in the wintertime, this farm that we go to takes a break and they don't milk their cows for about 2 months, because as we live in Idaho, it does get colder in the wintertime and milk production goes down. But everything that they sell there is 100% grass-fed and it's organic. And I actually go and work on this farm 2 days a week with my dear friend Jennifer that lives in Boise as well. And we have seen some amazing things. And we also carpool to do our work. And we've been trading, you know, some different things with the farm for our food and that sort of thing. So it's been an amazing relationship and an amazing glimpse at a way of life that I think is, as we know, is largely dying out. So yeah, the carpooling and the community and the ability to trade to you know, and it's done on a family to family basis, which is also really rewarding too.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's so important and what's lacking now is a sense of community, and it's so great when you can build a community and know that you're doing good things for the land and for the animals and for yourselves. And you know, you'd mentioned to me that there's a lot of criticisms made about sustainable and organic food, and that it's you know, cannot possibly feed everyone. If you can touch on that as well.
Well, I think that there's obviously there's a lot of criticism, and I think part of that reason is because the conventional food system is so big and so powerful. If you have watched foods like, movies like Food Inc., mm-hmm. and there's a lot of other documentaries that you can see, but it talks about, you know, just how much of our food system those entities control, and it's well over 95% now, I'm sure, because Food Inc. came out, you know, a couple of years ago, and I think at that point, and I could be wrong about the numbers precisely, but I think at that point they said that almost 90% of our food system was controlled by those entities, and I think, you know, if you just look at, you know, logically, there's a motive to telling people that you can't feed communities sustainably because that big food system, you know, it wants to make money. It's not concerned about the health of the consumer. They're concerned about turning a profit. And all you have to do is, you know, you can do any kind of research you want, and you can find out what kind of conditions are in existence on those facilities. And they are not set up to give the animals place to roam and be happy. You know, it's a production line, and they're crammed in there, and they're, you know, being fed stuff that is cheap and not good for them. And I mean, the whole system is geared toward profit. So I think it's definitely in the interest of the big companies and the big corporations to push that whole mantra of it can't be done. But if you look at the whole of human existence on this planet, you know, depending on your point of view, whether you're, you know, religious or not, you know, you might say, well, people have been around for thousands of years or millions of years, but the whole of human society has existed on sustainable agriculture, and it's only been in the last 160 years or so that we've, you know, developed this convenience, the system of convenience and mechanization since the Industrial Revolution. So, and some of these societies that we had, you know, even hundreds and hundreds of years ago were quite large, and they still were able to, you know, to feed people sustainably. So I think, you know, if you look at it from just a numbers point and how long we've been on Earth and how short of a speck of time we've been industrialized as a society, I think it's pretty obvious that we can do it.
Oh,
yeah. We have to stop saying that we can't do it because we're already doing it and we've done it.
So. Yeah. Well, it's so ironic that, you know, they think of it as convenience. Like, you know, these are convenience foods, and it's made everything more convenient. It's also made everybody unhealthy. It's like, how convenient is that, right? I mean, that's what's so ridiculous.
Right. It's a trade-off, I think. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, can you go down to the store and buy anything you want any time of the day, you know, any time of the year? Probably. Is it good for you? No. Is it good for the environment? Probably not. And I think we've gotten so used to having all those things available anytime we want, we don't reckon to the notion of, gee, maybe I should eat in season, or maybe I should, you know, eat something that's available this time of year and not worry if I can't get strawberries in December, or not worry if I can't get, you know, watermelons in January or something like that. Because that's how people have eaten for so many years, but our whole mentality now is we want everything when we want it. We don't want to wait. We don't want to have to sacrifice, and we don't focus on the things that we do have at that moment and that are available for us to eat.
Yeah, that is so true. You know, I wanted to mention another couple of books. There's one by Annie Bond called True Food, which is wonderful. And she talks about sustainability, and she also has all these recipes for canning and storing and all this great stuff. And then I interviewed Mariel Hemingway last year about her wonderful cookbook. It's called Mariel's Kitchen, and it's divided into the four seasons, and she uses all the seasonal produce. Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful book, and she's a very nice woman. But there's so many good resources out there. Now, Rainey, I know that you're part of Real Food Media Network, and that's a group of sites dedicated to activism and awareness about sustainable and slow food. Oh, slow food. That's the other part of Annie Bond's book. It's all about slow food, living and farming. Talk to us a little. I mean, it sounds like a slow food, pretty much what we've been talking about, just in case listeners are, you know, not familiar with that term.
Yes. Well, I think, again, just going back to what I was saying about how we've, in the last 150, 160 years, you know, gone back, or we've reverted to, rather, this way of eating convenience foods. So slow food is kind of the opposite of that. It's, you know, preparing something from scratch, having the raw ingredients to make those foods. And also, I think a real important component of slow food, again, is the sustainable and organic and grass-fed foods that you can get in your local communities.
Yeah, I think, go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. the slow food, I mean, also a big part of the slow food that's appealing and I think brings together communities is the fact that preparing food is such a social and community-based activity, and it brings people together. And I think that brings people together much more than the fast, convenient foods that we've been eating, you know, where you're running and grabbing something and tearing off to your next task or activity. Because when you eat a slow meal, you have time to sit and contemplate and talk and interact with other people.
Yeah, it's so true. It's fantastic. Well, I just think the work you do is amazing. And if you can give us your different sites, that would be great.
Oh, you mean like maybe other websites on my blog?
I know you're part of the Real Food Media Network.
Yeah.
That's a group of sites. And then I know that you do the agricultural, your site, the Agricultural Society or Agriculture Society.
Yeah, there's so many wonderful groups. I don't know if I have time to name them all, but some of my favorites are Anne Marie Michaels, who's the founder of Real Food Media, has her website is cheeseslave.com. Isn't that funny?
That is funny.
And then there's The Nourished Kitchen with Jenny McGruther. And then Kelly the Kitchen Cop is kellythekitchencop.com.
Oh, that's cute.
There's Heart Key is Online, which is a blog that's done by Kimberly Heart Key. And actually, I wanted to mention this really quick.
Sure.
Because it's coming up next week, and it's very important. But all of these bloggers that I just mentioned, and myself, and some other people, probably from our group as well, and a lot of other food activists, writers, doctors, and nutritionists are going to be attending the Weston A. Price Wise Traditions Conference that is actually occurring in King of Prussia, Philadelphia, next week on the 12th, 13th, and 14th. And those bloggers that I just mentioned, Kelly the Kitchen Cop, Jenny McGruther, Anne Marie Michaels, and Kimberly Hartke, they will be actually speaking at the conference about social media and food activism.
Oh, that's great. Well, that sounds like a terrific event. Now, are you going to be there as well?
Yes, I am going. I will not be speaking, but I'm just thrilled to have been able to have a chance to go. It was kind of a last-minute thing, and it's kind of a dream come true, I think, because I've wanted to go for the last couple of years, and it's all the way across the country, which, you know, those kinds of trips are often, you know, kind of spendy. So, I'm very excited, and there's a wonderful lineup of speakers, as I said, doctors, nutritionists, authors, food activists, and a number of other people who will be speaking about, you know, these really important issues of nutrient-dense diets and sustainable foods. So it's going to be great.
Oh, well, I'm so glad. And Rainey, I'm so glad you came on today. And if people want to learn more, they can go to itsyourhealthnetwork.com. You can watch It's Your Health TV. I just did a recent segment about consignment shopping.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was so funny because I don't know. There's a woman named Ayla Brown, and she was on American Idol, and her father is one of the senators here in Massachusetts. And I went up to, I didn't even know her. I tapped her to ask her if some pants I was wearing were too tight. I love people. And I'm like, wait a second, I recognize you. And I said, are you famous? And she said, well, maybe I'm Ayla Brown. I go, oh my God. And I thought it was cool because here, you know, the very wealthy, I'm sure that she could be buying new clothes, but yet her philosophy was buying secondhand. And I thought that's really cool. So anyway, people can check that out.
Yeah.
You can listen to audio archives and you can check me out on KKZZ with Freeman Michaels in Ventura County. I hope everyone has a great day and get out there and get some grass-fed beef. All right. Take care.